Knockouts champion on notice. Putting the tag team title situation on notice.
Check this out. Check this out.
Bingo killer!
Come to Puerto Rico, the shining star of the Caribbean.
Team Reach Around is back in the Let Me Talk to You zone. We're back, we're back, we're back. Andrew, it's been a while. It's been a while since it's been just me and you. We were rocking solo there, just us two for a little while on the Red Zone. Now we're here again. Let Me Talk to You. How does it feel?
It feels good, man. It feels, I don't know. Fame would probably feel uncomfortable with how good it feels.
Oh man! So I wanted to ask, because I don't think you ever said anything about it. And since we are on Let Me Talk to You, I wanted to ask you this: how do you feel about how the Hardys were written out of Impact? I think that was one of the most awkwardly written things almost ever.
Yeah, I mean, was there a good way to do it though? I mean, the Hardys offered to come back and drop the titles, and they said nah. So here we are. Like, isn't that the deal? Isn't that what Queen Rebecca told us anyway? I'm living in and out of kayfabe, but
Queen Rebecca, Rebby Hardys, her Twitter is a fucking gold mine. Like, it's
she's great.
Yeah, she's gangster. She's more than great. she goes full gangster sometimes, and I expect her to just be like Impact's going to be swimming with the fishes soon, because that woman is hilarious.
Yes, yes she is.
But let's go ahead and get into Let Me Talk to You. Let's get into this this episode of Impact.
I hope you're sitting down, eyes peeled, ears open, and whether you want to or not, let me talk to you.
We start off tonight with Alberto El Patron, which I'm still getting used to calling him that.
Getting used to you calling him that.
But I texted you this a little bit afterwards. He really gets the crowd into it. He gets a big ovation from him. He eventually calls out EC3. And then he gets a C versus 3 chant started. This has been the most involved I've seen the Impact crowd in anything going on their TV besides anything Hardy in quite a while. And it was a bit refreshing and definitely good to start the show off with this that vibe and get that throughout the show. How'd you feel about that part?
Yeah, I thought the crowd really was into it. That's, it was... It's noticeable how much more they were into it, especially, at the beginning of the show. I don't know where this fell in the tapings. Is this like the second episode of the series? Yeah. That's got to be a tough get through for them as well. So for them to be sort of, really excited coming out of that first episode into the second one, I thought that was good. I did have some problems with El Patron's promo here, though. First and foremost, he can't really even pronounce his own name. He's like Alberto Patron, Alberto El Patron, and then El Patron. And it's just like he's got to, you're new to the company. Let's find a way to say it, hammer it down, and beat people over the head with it so that they know what it is. Also, he starts off by saying how happy he is to be in a place where he could be who he wants to be, but he was absolutely no different at all than anything he's ever been. And then he immediately gets pissed off about backstage politics taking this title away from him, which they I don't know. None of this makes sense. Oh, and this is my house.
Oh, mention that. The whole this is my house thing for his woman, fiance, whatever she is, Paige, that's her saying. But yeah, I mean, his promo here, while I did find it fun, I mean, yeah, it was still a little awkward, but I forgot just how much of a face Alberto can be, because he was a heel basically the whole time in his most recent WWE run. I did think it was funny when EC3 finally did come out, he got a No Cojones chant going, and then we got the dueling No Cojones Yes He Does chants going on. Like,
yeah, there was an unusual amount of men that could confirm in fact he had cojones, like as if they all had seen with their own very eyes. So that was awkward to me anyway, but I did like the chant. That was good.
You had to think that Paige had to get involved in that chant, considering that she was there. They were so awkwardly avoided that side of the ring, and you pointed it out, you texted it to me, and I was like, yeah, she's there. And it's just those type of things. You would think, like, just let her watch the match from backstage at that point. As in the crowd was into this match, you kind of want that sweeping shot to show the whole crowd. They couldn't do that because of her being out there. But you have to think, if Paige gets released, she's coming to Impact, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, immediately. unless for some reason she wants to... She could probably work something out where she could do this too, but her dad, I believe, still runs a promotion in England, so she would definitely want to do a handful of shows out there, make them a bunch of money, and then probably do whatever she wants to do from there.
Yeah, Alberto also says that he... Which, considering that Roman Reigns isn't there, I don't know how he's going to fight the big dog, but hey, you know, it is
what
it is.
I don't think that's happening, and he's got bigger things lined up. Just slightly larger things on the horizon.
Absolutely. But then we get the fight breaking out between the two, and Alberto accepts the match for later on in the night. Alberto Del Rio versus EC3. As an overall opening to this show, I thought this was pretty good. Unfortunately, they immediately followed it up with one of the most awkward backstage segments that I've ever seen. Dutch Mantel and the gang, that I like to call them, talking about what to do with the tag titles. And it's like, for that to end with just Bruce Pritchard saying, oh, I got it, I'm gonna take care of it, just trust me, I'm gonna go out there and not show up till the end of the show. But I mean, I don't know, just have the man come out there and announce it. What was the purpose of this backstage segment? Does this do anything for you?
No, I actually sort of like the authenticity of the whole thing, like right up until, so they're having this like 45 to second to a minute long exchange about like what they might do about the tag team titles. And then, like you said, Bruce Pritchard just gets up. He's like, I got this. It's like, well, come on. Like if there was like an actual brainstorming session going on there, like I might've been into it. Like, all right, what if we do this? Nah, what if we do this? What if we do a tournament? What if we do an elimination match or whatever the case may be? Like that would have been interesting to kind of take a peek behind the fake curtain, not quite the full curtain, but you know, it would have been a nice touch, I thought. But the fact that it ended the way that it did, I thought it was pretty stupid. But before we move on, EC3 was one of the most over fucking wrestlers in the world, like some point in the year to 18 months ago. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. He's not even that far. He hasn't fallen that far, but it's just like, eh, I don't care. I'm not invested at all. Like, he needs to just go back to being a full-blown heel. And maybe that's where they're leaning, but he's been dancing this tweener line for far too long. He needs to pick a side.
Yeah, and, you know, let's go ahead and talk about it. He had the match with Alberto. He did lose on the cross arm breaker, tapping out. His first time tapping out in Impact Wrestling. Yeah. After the match, him and Alberto shake hands. Alberto says he gave EC3 gave him one of the best matches of his career, which I can't really say I agree with that. But, yeah, you know, for the story, I mean, I guess they want to push it forward. I just knew EC3 was going to attack him afterwards. But no, he slides out the ring and they keep it moving. But EC3 has to turn heel here at some point. How would you book EC3's turn?
Either, I mean, he's either turning heel or he's going. Like, he's leaving. Like, that's the way I felt about it. The way that he just comes out, he jobs the Patron. They kind of, like, the whole exchange at the end felt very patronizing. El Patron, patronizing, if you will. And, you know, he's just kind of, it was building up to EC3 turning on him. So I would have absolutely just had him turn right there. Maybe he just snaps and he feels all left out, like Aunt Dixie's gone. And now what the hell is happening to Ethan Carter? You know, like maybe they can work that a little bit more into it. And just eventually he snaps. He's had enough of everybody. He's cheering up Lashley, Patron, Moose, anybody who isn't Cody Rhodes, because his suit's too expensive. Let's not fuck up a Cody Rhodes. But
yeah, we'll definitely get to Cody Rhodes. But yeah, something has to happen with EC3. And I'm surprised they haven't played off the whole angle of him. He's supposed to be a Carter. The Carters don't own TNA anymore. So why haven't they? Like, I would almost respect it more if Bruce Pritchard or Dutch Mantel came out and said, since you are a Carter, you have to pay for the sins of your aunt. You have to start all the way from the bottom. Boom. That explains it all right there.
Yeah. That would have been perfect.
So, I mean, we're not getting something like that. So we'll see how they continue to book EC3 going forward. Throughout this episode of Impact, we got a lot of segments where Borash was getting things, information straight from the back. Matthews would then throw basically a bitch fit about why he doesn't have this information. They keep going with this Matthews thing. And not to say that I have a problem with the storyline overall. It's more so how much of it we're getting on each show.
Yeah,
it just seems like a little bit too much. Like, I understand what they're trying to get across with it, but Just give us, like, all we need is once, maybe twice throughout the show, but literally I think there was like five times this shit happened.
Yeah, and Matthews, all right, if he's going to do this heel thing, like, whatever, he actually got a pop out of me a couple times tonight. There was a couple moments that he said something, and I was just like, okay, like, it wasn't too far. Like, the whole, like, you know, people who don't have enough money to buy NXT tickets line or whatever the crap, yeah. That, you know, he says all that kind of stuff. That's taking it a little too far for me, but shitting on Borash is fine with me, because Borash is, you know, he's very like Byron Saxton-y. He's like a human, wacky, inflatable, arm flailing tube man. That's basically what Jeremy Borash is. So, you know, I like their back and forth, but yeah, they just need to tone it down a little to significantly, like somewhere in between there.
yeah, for sure. So we get debut in Impact Wrestling next, and that's Garza Jr. and Laredo Kid versus Eli Drake and Tyrus. Before this, how familiar are you with Garza and Laredo Kid?
Not at all.
Me either. And considering you probably have two of the smarkiest people on the WWPN on this podcast right now, that says a lot that neither one of us are really familiar with.
Yeah, I assume they're Global Force people. Is that the deal here?
Yeah. Okay. No, I actually think they're from Conan's promotion, because they have a deal with the Crush or whatever it's called. So yeah. I think they may be from there. But this match, you know, this was a pretty straightforward match to introduce a tag team. I don't know if I like the fact that they went over on Eli Drake specifically. I could care less about Tyrus. But I know you listen to this podcast. You know how me and Josh feel about Eli Drake. And you talk about EC3 being pushed down the card. Like, goddamn, Eli Drake's being pushed down too. And he reportedly signed a new deal with Impact to stay on long term. And they're still treating him this way. But, you know, nothing really stood out that I could say about Garza and Laredo Kid. I just don't think that Eli Drake and Tyrus necessarily worked that style that they worked to kind of highlight them. But, you know, it was a good thing to introduce a tag team. They definitely get the win here. And then considering what we got with the tag team titles later down the road, you kind of want to establish as many tag teams as what you can. What did you feel about this match? And what do you walk away thinking about Garza Jr. and Laredo Kid?
Yeah, I went into this just figuring they were going to lose just because I hadn't heard of them, and Eli and Tyrus are at least should be treated much better than they are in the grand scheme of things. And, you know, for what it's worth, it looks like after tonight's episode, like, they're starting to get things back on track to some degree. At least you could tell, like, creative is going a new direction, and where it ends up, we'll see. But, you know, I figured that maybe Eli Drake and Tyrus could be big players. They think that they're Jericho Owens. Like, that's yeah. What the backstage people thinks that they got here. That's not what they got here. I like Tyrus, and I Eli Drake, I'm about as high on as you guys are. I think he's the White Rock. Like, that's his promo style. He comes out and it sounds like me cutting a rock promo. Like, that's what Eli Drake is. So, and it's great. I think he pulls it off pretty well. Dummies instead of jabronis, and, you know, like, all his shtick. It's almost perfectly a ripoff of it, but it works for him, and I think he definitely should be in the main event picture right now instead of floundering around with Tyrus. And Tyrus could be there too. I like Tyrus. He's good on the Greg Gutfeld show.
Tyrus, for all it's worth, is probably the smartest person in Impact Wrestling. Like, I love hearing him talk, like, politics, anything. He's just a intelligent guy. You would think he would get more promo time, but he doesn't. What I found interesting, though, is that before this match, they show a video package that's the history of Tyrus and Eli Drake. Considering it's only been like 3 weeks, I mean, yeah. Like, and you really brought it all home to me just saying that they think they're the Jericho of Impact, and it's like you're trying to play it off that way, and it's really not. You haven't booked him that well, but Eli Drake, I think. Absolutely, he needs that world title. He needs to be in that picture. I think once they get the belt off Lashley, if they do, I think it's going to open the door more. They kind of booked themselves in the corner with Lashley. You've made him look so dominant, and literally over like the last 3 months of 2016, he literally went over everybody on the roster. And yeah. So now you booked yourself to where you have to rely on bringing people in, like what was it, Josh Bennett? Was that his name? Whatever.
Oh, Josh Barnett.
Barnett to come in and challenge him. And it's like, yeah, you haven't booked anybody well. And Alberto last week. So that's the program they're going to be going forward with now. And interesting enough, we didn't get any Lashley on tonight's show.
Yeah. Does he have a fight coming up? That's always like what I go to whenever he's not on shows.
Not that I'm aware of, but I guess that makes sense. If he's not on next week, I take it that he's training for a fight. But you would think they want to get the title off of him. Unless he walks out in that fight carrying the TNA title, Get the belt.
I think
off
he does that. I think
he did
he
it one
that.
Time. I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I usually watch his fights. He's actually, I don't know a whole lot about MMA, but I mean, he looks like he could pretty much beat up anybody in the Bellator heavyweight division, then, like from what I can see, you know, so he could easily be their champion at some point somewhere down the road. That would be fun for Impact, but I think he leaves Impact at some, I think he's out the door too. I think like the new management came in and they're like, you know what, fuck it. Anybody who's making over $100,000 a year, we're getting rid of. And I think Bobby Lashley's on that list and they're going to start weaning these guys out.
Yeah, I mean, Bobby Lashley was reported one of the ones who did get locked up under a new contract when they came. Now, they weren't announcing length, so I think it was more of a, we're going to restructure your current deal, not a whole new deal.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be, I mean, this, he's had a great run in 2016. If he wants to go to fighting full-time, WWE has to be paying attention, especially because they seem to just be in acquisition mode to sign as many people as they have. It's just not a good, a perfect storm for TNA to really keep any of their talent, because you have to think with WWE moving and getting more shows and doing more things, I mean, and your company's not in a good place. It would be different if TNA was, this was 2006 or 7 when TNA was the best place they were and people stayed. Now it's like, hey, go chase the money and also work for a company that's probably going to pay you on time.
But there's that.
Yeah, there's always that.
And isn't going to lose some sort of lawsuit to the Hardys in the near future.
But, you know, and the thing is that, I mean, credit to their staff, because my job, well, not the one I work at currently, an old job of mine, missed a paycheck of mine one time. And I was calling that the goddamn home office, that payroll department, hourly, like, what the fuck are you going to do about my money? And for them to pay people as late as they have, and honestly, they don't really, no one seems to make a super big fuss about it to after they leave TNA, I badmouth the shit out of them. But we got,
it makes you wonder how real that is, like how much that actually is happening.
Yeah, it's they probably exaggerated a little bit.
Yeah.
So this package about the partnership with Pro Wrestling Noah, this bothers me. I get it. There are a lot of good wrestlers in Pro Wrestling Noah, and they can get some very good talent exchange and some matchups going on. But for all intents and purposes, Noah is basically the TNA of Japan. They have money issues. They have issues booking buildings. They have almost everything that you can list as an issue with TNA. Noah's had the same issue. So it kind of seems like two bums on the street got together and they're like, hey, we can make a bigger fire if we combine all everything we have.
Yeah, it's amazing it's taken these two this long to find one another, right? Like, what has this happened already? I thought we were going to get the Killer Elite Squad coming out to win these fucking tag team titles. Wouldn't that? That they're not going to do shit.
But they're back in New Japan now, so that's not happening.
They are? I thought that was just part of some partnership thing that they had going on.
Oh, well, maybe it's not long term. I don't know the details.
Suzuki Gun's Noah, aren't they? Are they Noah. New Japan that moved back? I don't know. That's so goddamn confusing.
The Noah and New Japan Pro Wrestling thing, because they used to be even more intertwined than what they are now. I always forget, like, well, who started where, whatever the fuck happened. I don't know.
Exactly. They did name drop Mara Fuji, who was in one of my favorite matches of 2016 against Okada. So King of Pro Wrestling, I believe. I think that was a mind blowing match. I was like the first one. I was like, JB, you got to watch this match.
JB, man, that was it's so funny how him coming on WWPN, he really didn't watch anything besides WWE, and now the man is like a wrestling savant. Like, he just everything he can get, all the wrestling. We got him. We got another one, Bella. We converted
him. We did. We hooked him.
And what was my favorite segment of the night? Brandi Rhodes comes out for a match. I forget the lady's name that she was coming out for a match with. Casey Quinn, yeah. I got her written down as Pretty Jobber. That's what I wrote her
there
down
as
my notes. Yeah. But Cody interrupts. And first he hands his Gen X title to Earl Hebner. Ask for it back. Well, later down in the promo, ask for it back and ask him what he was doing. He offers, what's her name? Casey Quinn, $45, says that it's $20 more than Impact would have paid her.
I died. I couldn't.
He challenges Moose for a match for the Impact Grand Championship. Like, Cody Rhodes is on another level. And you just have to think why WWE would not let him out of this damn Stardust gimmick, because he is this is one of the better stories, seriously, for someone to leave. And as much as Ryback tries to act like, oh, I left the big guys, I left money on the table, Cody Rhodes left WWE and has worked almost every other promotion in the world, has completely
Ryback's
spread his name around.
Ryback's working at fucking bingo halls in New Jersey for Pat Buck right now. That's
exactly. And it's just amazing. And, you know, he definitely deserves it. Why I think that some of his matches have kind of started all being utterly the same to a certain degree, but he's really coming to his own. Like, seeing him in ROH, seeing him in TNA, you know, alluding to the Too Sweet, just how he works in kind of the Bullet Club stuff. This guy's he's great, man. What were your thoughts here?
Cody Rhodes is a national treasure. He's the grandson of a plumber. He's the star that left them in the dust. My God. This whole fucking segment, this tied this whole thing in for me perfectly. I was not a huge fan of the Cody Rhodes post-WWE run, frankly, up until that moment where he tried to hand that girl $45, and I just was like, all right, I got to start paying closer attention. This motherfucker's killing it. So he's married to the hottest woman on the planet, potentially. Like, sweet Jesus, Brandi Rhodes is just gorgeous. Like,
isn't she? She's almost too pretty to be a wrestler, because it's like, you don't want to see anybody hit her in the face. She is drop-dead gorgeous.
You know she can't sing a note, because she could drop a top 50 album tomorrow if she could. Like, a slutty enough album cover would make her a platinum record tomorrow.
absolutely. That's a gorgeous woman, man. Yeah. And to think the Rhodes name is going to be passed on now, and people are going to be like, it's going to be a mixed race child. They're going to be like, wait a second, you're Dusty Rhodes' grandson?
It's awesome, I mean, man. To be fair, Dusty Rhodes' character was stolen from, what was it, Thunderbolt Patterson? Yeah, like, it was true. Just like, so, yeah. I mean, Dusty Rhodes, black by association? I don't know, your call.
I mean, I would have drafted, if in the racial draft, Dusty Rhodes would have got drafted. He would have been the first round pick.
Yeah, I'd buy it. I mean, I wouldn't. I'd try to make an argument because the white delegation would want him, obviously. But I'd probably lose in appeals.
Oh man! So as we're talking about Dusty Rhodes, just real quick, off the top of your head, what's one of your favorite Dusty Rhodes moments?
Well, I mean, the Hard Times promo, but like, really, for me, the stuff that I love about Dusty is like all the backstage NXT shit. Like,
that shit was golden, man.
Yeah. Like, he's just such a brilliant mind, and the thought of him, like, teaching promo classes. Like, imagine, like, I know that this isn't how it was, but, like, imagine just walking into a classroom, sitting at one of those desks with the desk attached to the chair, and then the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, walks into the ring. And it's just like, what the fuck? You're just like, that would be wonderful. So, yeah, I just, that stuff is you know, awesome for me personally. I think that's the best way. I'm going to remember Dusty anyways, the way that they remember him.
Exactly. And people, I know this is an audio podcast, but Andrew's lights just went off. And do you have clap-on lights, Andrew? Is that
you
what I just...
You bet your ass I got clap-on. I don't want to flip a switch, man. This is... If I could, like, Bluetooth that shit, I'd find a way to do it. But clap-on, clap-off.
Oh, man. I haven't seen a clap-on light in years. But you strike me as a clap-on light type of dude.
It was a gag gift that has turned into a lifestyle.
Question. And, you know, I don't give a damn. We'll go X-rated whenever I damn well please. How many times has the clap-on light gone on and off during sex, Andrew?
On and off during sex, many a time, realistically, but it is convenient at times. It just, you know, it's worked. It's the clapper has gotten me at least some booty over time. I will say that.
All right. Oh man. The places these podcasts end up.
Why did I let these words just escape? Like, I'm sorry. Go ahead, folks.
I draw it out of people. So we briefly touched on it, but is there anything more in depth you want to go over on this Alberto El Patron and EC3 match?
The match itself was fine. I thought it was, you know, it was what it was. It wasn't the best match of Alberto El Patron's career, but it was, yeah. No, I don't really have much more to add on it. It was, you know, it was fine. It was a perfectly good match. I thought it should have main evented.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
other than that, no real complaints.
Yeah, that was my biggest complaint with it too, is that it, especially on a card that only had three matches, you kind of want to end the show, at least in my opinion, with an actual wrestling match. You could have easily flip-flopped this with the whole tag team thing, because nothing marquee went on there. I mean, yeah, LAX did come back, but...
Yeah, what? That, no, that's not doing it for you?
I mean, I don't know. I loved LAX back in their heyday, absolutely. I don't know anyone who could not, but... Conan is old as shit now. Like, this man can, like, as much as he came out there with all the bandanas and shit, throwing up gang signs, like, seriously, my daughter can walk up and kick him in his leg and probably, like, shatter his hip. Like, that's, it's gotten that bad, so.
Like, yeah, where is Hernandez? No Hernandez? What the fuck is he doing?
He's not done anything. You could think that you can call him and be like, hey, like, sandwiches for a week. He would have shown up.
I don't know. Maybe they've completely soured on him with that whole thing where I guess he got them in trouble with Lucha Underground whole gimmick. I don't know. There was some legal dispute about him being on both shows at the same time. But I'm not buying Conan as a wrestler. Like, if they try to have him and Homicide tag teaming together, I'm gonna have an issue. But I like that they're bringing in like new crew members. We'll find out who they are. They're all throwing up the LAX. They got some new flag thing that doesn't look Mexican at all. I don't really understand it, but I want to believe that Zeb Coulter brought them in, that this is a new Mex-America gimmick.
Yeah, I mean, Alberto is there too, but I like the fact
that... And Jack Swagger soon. They can
just mix it all together. But I like the fact that they also have Angel Ortiz, and considering if they move into a feud with Decay... I'm sorry, Angel Rose, that they, if they have a feud going on with Decay, she can match up with Rosemary, so it can be some synergy there all across the board. I like that aspect of it. And, you know, really, they did need almost an instant faction to go back into feuding with Decay or do whatever, because the Hardys matched up with Decay perfectly before Rebby Hardy got pregnant, and they had, you know, her and Rosemary do some stuff. So, you know, they're going to be serviceable. I don't know the new guys that they have in it. That's probably going to be the actual tag team that goes after these titles, because I just can't imagine Conan in a tag team title match in 2017. But if he pulls out a Tequila Sunrise or two, that'll be worth the price of admission.
So I'm surprised we got a Gringo Killer. Like, that move. Literally gonna fucking kill somebody one day. At this point, the move is dangerous as shit.
But it's a beautiful move, though.
It is, but it's horrifying. Like, I would, it's like, it's Styles Clash levels of dangerous to me. Like, if not worse, you have no control if you're the guy taking that move.
Yeah. You kind of just gotta hope that they know what the fuck they're doing and they didn't drink it as much tequila as I usually drink that day.
Yeah.
So the tag teams that are involved here, I mean, we kind of got into it, so we might as well finish it off. Bruce Pritchard, at the end of the night, came out and announced that what's going on with the tag team titles, that there will be the top four teams will fight to crown the new tag team champions. So we had Decay, we had Reno Scum, Garza and Laredo Kid, and then the new LAX. So I ask you, who's winning these titles?
I want to say Decay, and then somebody can chase him, but I'm really hoping Reno Scum pulls this out, man. I'm into Reno Scum. I don't know why. I appreciate the whole punk scene. I've like been to CBGBs like before they closed it. I don't know. I'm into it.
So your pick is Decay, but you hope for Reno Scum.
Yes. Yeah. I think Decay wins it, and then maybe, I don't know. LAX probably should win it based on the booking tonight, but I don't know. Decay deserves it more. Yeah, at least that's the way I'm looking at it.
Yeah, I really don't have a pick out of these teams of who I'd rather see, because I see potential in all these teams. Decay, we already know, they're a proven commodity. I like the gimmick of LAX. Reno Scum, like you, I'm into them. Like, that promo they cut, I was just sitting back like, okay, there was nothing really of note that I walk away that would just stick with me, other than these bastards have some type of swagger that just has me enthralled with them. Like, I'm really into them. And Garza and Laredo Kid, only because their style, and it'd be something that maybe can bring more eyes to the product. Not necessarily, but it could be something that, to see them in a match against Decay, I think that would be a little fun.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting how they interact with LAX in that match, right? Like, I mean, it's just, you know, maybe they could join at some point down the road. I don't know. But, yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I think Decay, I don't know. If you put it on LAX, who's chasing them? Because Decay can't work as baby faces in my mind. So unless you're going to try and just... You're going to try and act as if Decay is just the Hardys now, and they're just going to keep doing this, like, super high-produced deletion type shit, and that's how they're going to try and win the lawsuit, and that it wasn't them, it was Decay, and I don't know. We're going to have Deleter Decay in the Supreme Court.
Oh, we're going to get into that right after we get our ratings. We're going to dive all the way into some discussion about that, but we did miss something along the way, and we missed that X Division match.
Yes.
Trevor Lee... The returning Suicide, which I don't know who the hell is under the mask this time, Braxton Sutter and Andrew Everett. This match had, for a long time, I was looking at this match, not a long time, I say about a third of the match, I was like, this is just crap. And then it seemed like at some point, and I don't remember the exact turning point, they went into some real X Division shit. And then we eventually got that Tower of Doom spot. I like that Matthews mentioned, and this was kind of meta, he said that if the X Division champion always has to defend their title in multi-man matches. Yeah, because you bastards don't ever give them no time. But I did like that line by Josh Matthews. Trevor Lee picked up the win here. After the match, Laura Van Ness came out to talk to Braxton Sutter and Allie, and then that brought out Sienna, who... The best thing to happen with Maria Kanellis leaving Impact has been Sienna being able to get on the mic. Because I enjoy her talking and getting to display some character. But let's talk about the match itself first. How did you feel about this X Division match?
I spent the whole match thinking about who's under the suicide mask. So I've got two theories. One, Davey Richards, just based on size alone. I'm just going with that kind of gimmick. If it's not Davey Richards, it's probably DJZ. And if it is DJZ, I've lost all respect for him. Because if they were like, hey, we need you to go out there and be Suicide, and he was just like, oh, okay. Like, dude's been actually doing a good job of trying to get himself over. He's really good in the ring, and he could just as easily have been in that spot. So if it is DJZ, and he wasn't just like, fuck you, and walked out the door, bad on him. but yeah, no, other than that, all four people in the ring are talented. Allie's cool. Laurel Van Ness, this is great. Like, I wasn't at all into her character whatsoever until Crazy Bridezilla thing started. So all of this was good as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I don't know. It was as good as it could be. But yeah, the match progressed nicely, I guess. Like you said, it started a little slow and then really picked up towards the end there. Everett and Lee are just like outstanding to me. I've been watching them for a while before they got the TNA and PWG. I'm sure you've seen some of that as well. But absolutely. they're really just excellent in-ring performers. So all of this worked for me. Except for the suicide thing. Like, what is that?
You made a good point there. Considering DJZ wasn't in this match, it absolutely has to be DJZ.
Yeah, in which case I've lost all respect for him.
But, Andrew Everett and Trevor Lee, I had been saying, I think, like 6 months ago, that this feud can put the X Division back on the match. I'm glad that they're, like, seem like they're going that way, but it seems like they're not ready to commit to it for some reason, because it should just be these two guys.
Oh, before we go on about the suicide gimmick, part of me wants to believe, or part of me would like to think, and this would be really awesome, if the suicide gimmick was TNA's version of NXT. Like, it's their developmental. They just put that mask on anybody that they sign new and they want to test out. So, like, in, like, a couple months, it'll be, like, a guy, like, that looks like Tyrus underneath the suicide mask, and they'll just treat him completely normal. He'll be in X Division matches. It would be really awesome if that was the case. So, yeah, Suicide being the developmental program for TNA. I hope it's true.
I liked it. I have, we have some discussions, just some things that I want to ask you about before we close the show after we get done with our ratings. So, that was pretty much Impact this week. You didn't touch on the Sienna thing and the Allie and where that's going. How do you feel about that? Laurel Van Ness, the fact that she's still in this wedding gown looking crazy as shit, I absolutely love.
Yeah, I love that, definitely. But I'm going to really start liking Allie and any storyline that she's involved in once they start letting her actually wrestle. So, if that's going to be the angle, is that, you know, now her and Braxton are together, she's been training and she's got something in the bag that Sienna wasn't ready for, and that's how this ends up, that'd be really cool. Like, all of a sudden she's just working super technical wrestling and just like runs circles around Sienna. I'll be in all in on it, but Sienna has been just outstanding on the mic. As good as Maria was, from what I'm hearing, she was probably like second or third best on the mic of anybody on the show. So why the hell wasn't she talking all this time?
I don't know. And Josh, I mean, to his credit, he had been saying for weeks that it was hard for him to get behind her because you don't know her as a character. And they kept having basically Maria talk for her. And now I don't understand why. She's fabulous on the mic. Like, there's no holes there at all. She's good in the ring. She has a devastating finisher.
Yeah, I mean, besides Rosemary, she's the best chick on the mic in the company right now. I mean,
yeah, exactly. Pinky thing still irks me from time to time. Don't ask me why. I seriously have a irrational just hate every time I see her pinky come up, and I don't fucking know why.
Yeah, I don't under. They need to like kind of explain why she has some of the quirks that she has, like the whole feathers thing and the pinky thing. And I don't know any of that's actually been explained. Other than she's just got these mildly psychotic character traits that, you know. I mean, that's fine. Like maybe one week it's just like, oh my god, Sienna forgot her Prozac, and she's just like snapping in the back, just murdering people. But yeah, I don't know. It's like you got to give me a reason why you're doing completely random goofy shit like that.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, that was Impact this week. What's your rating for Impact this week? It surprisingly improved Impact.
Going in with the expectations I went in on, this is like a 7.5, especially considering it was only three matches. The 7.58 area. I mean, I don't want to rate too high. It's Impact, but it was way more entertaining than I expected. Like I said, I'm into Reno Scum, into the Laurel Van Ness shit, loving the Cody Rhodes stuff. I wasn't like keen on the El Patron stuff, but I could tell it was working for at least some of the audience, which is fine. I'm not going to love everything. And the suicide gimmicks got me really intrigued. So all of it's, you know, it's got my attention at a minimum.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely is doing that. Yeah. So me, I mean, I'd have to rate it a 7. I think this was a solid show. Definitely improvements over like the last 5 Impact Wrestling. It just seemed like it had a different feel. And I liked how into the crowd, it seemed like they were into this show, and that definitely helps just your feel of it. If you have a sucky crowd, which you review NXT, so I know you know all about crowds that just...
I do. Hey, you can say what you want about Full Sail. They're lively, if nothing else. They are always... There's never a dead Full Sail crowd, but it's just how obnoxious are they going to be on any given week.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, this is a very solid show and has me excited to see what they do next week, has me excited to see what they do with these tag team titles. And as much as I'm not happy with it right now, I want to see what they're going to do with EC3, because I have to believe, I just refuse to believe that they're just going to let this guy fall down the card unless he is leaving. If he's came and told them, look, after my contract, I'm gone. I mean, I can respect him more for it, and I respect what they're doing, but until that's known, I'm just going to have an issue with this overall.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, he's either out the door, or he's set up for a monster heel run at some point in the very near future, and either way, I'm not going to really complain about it. I'll get to see what I want to see. So it's fun.
Exactly. So what I wanted to ask you about after these ratings is GFW. We know Jeff Jarrett is now back in some type of executive position.
The wrestling company or the gold selling company?
Both.
Okay.
Both.
Is it the same?
I don't know. Did you buy any Global Force gold? Did you get your gold?
Of course I have some Global Force gold. Yeah, no. And I've also got some Southpaw Regional Wrestling silver, in case anybody's paying attention to what's going on in Reddit. No, I don't have any gold. But as soon as I heard that, I was like, well, it's official. Anyone can run a successful promotion except for Jeff Jarrett. Like, if we really put our minds into it and we got enough money, we could easily be more successful than Jeff Jarrett in 2017.
Yeah, I mean, that has to look crazy that you have your own wrestling promotion, but yet you came back to your old wrestling promotion rather than push the one that you're currently trying to build. But the whole Jeff Jarrett teased that there would be a GFW TNA relationship, and you brought up the fact of, you know, Suicide being the NXT for TNA. How would you be interested if they said, hey, on our website we're gonna have an hour long GFW show? Would you watch it? If it was TNA's version of NXT,
I'd have to like look to see who they bring in. I don't know. Based on if the GFW roster as it was worth watching, people would have watched it, and he wouldn't be selling gold. So if it's Reno Scum's got me intrigued. Like, I don't know. I might tune in to see what they might be doing on the show if they end up on that program, but. you know, it would really be a matter of like, if this turns into like a What Culture Pro Wrestling type thing, and they can get like a bunch of big indie names to pop in and out for programs, sure. But if it's just a bunch of J Brones that can't make the TNA roster, then no, I wouldn't fucking waste my time. That's another thing that I thought would be funny about the Suicide being the developmental gimmick, is that if in fact you can't make TNA, like, that's exactly what you should do. Is commit suicide. Funny. Funny.
But so we have GFW champions and Reno Scum and Cody Rhodes here, like, and they're just proudly carrying these titles out with them. What the why? Why is Cody Rhodes carrying the Gen X title? Why? Tell me.
I don't know. Because he can. Does he have any other belts? I know, I'm sure he's got some other belts and other indie promotions, but yeah, it's some gold that he's allowed to bring, and I think it adds to his character. Especially, he's a heel. Like, being the the GFW Next Gen champion might be the most heel thing you can be on another wrestling program. Like, no one gives a shit about that belt. No one even knows what it is. It's like the Super Kick Party belt, except not nearly as cool.
That Super Kick Party belt, goddammit.
Yeah, I don't understand what it is, and I don't care. It looks awesome. Yeah. Like, it's just another belt for them to wear, and that's cool with me.
So, finally, the last thing I wanted to talk to you about is this whole Hardy and TNA thing. You kind of alluded to what you think is going to shake down. I guess you think that, and correct me if I'm wrong, do you think that TNA is going to be found to not own any part of the Broken Hardys?
Yeah, I think the gimmick is, it's not something that they can quantify into anything other than, quote, intellectual property. And if it is intellectual property, it's obviously Matt Hardy's intellectual property. You know, like, I think that's ultimately how the court will end up finding it. It's very similar, as I think I've mentioned in the past, to like the WCW thing with Hall and Nash, in that they came over, yeah, they changed their names, but Hall was still flicking toothpicks into cameras and saying, hey, yo, and doing everything he did as Razor Ramon. And ultimately, the court found that, like, that's just basically his personality turned up a little bit, and that WWE doesn't own his personality. So I think that's what they're going to end up doing with the Hardys here. If, you know, like we were saying, if they get even the slightest fraction of compensation in you know, on a royalty basis, WWE is definitely not going to let them do it, because they won't sign the check. They're not going to be sending checks to TNA under any
circumstances. No way in hell. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. The fact that it's going on even this long, the fact that, you know, Dish Network pulled the ROH pay-per-view, kind of makes me worried that they may have a ground to stand on. I don't know. You did bring up the Hall and Nash thing. So, I mean,
I'm bringing legal precedence. Yeah, I'm bringing legal precedence.
Yeah.
The type of analysis you get here on the Wrestling World Podcast.
I mean, so we'll see how it goes. It sucks if they aren't able to use the gimmick. I hope that they are able to use it, because Matt Hardy's put a lot into it. No matter how many other people have said, hey, maybe you should do this, there's no way you can get me to believe that that's not almost a holy creation of just Matt Hardy. So, I mean,
we were talking about it on the Red Zone. There's definitely ways they could tweak it. Like the damaged Hardys, Empress Rebecca, Emperor Maxwell, trying to think of Monsieur Benjamin. They can, like, you know, they can always come up, they can tweak it a little bit here and there and probably get themselves around it if they had to. So I don't know. I'm not at all interested in regular old Hardys being in WWE. I don't care. I don't want to see Jeff Hardy die on a pay-per-view. That's not fun for me.
I mean, I wouldn't want to see that either. We wrestling fans, we've been traumatized by some shit, man.
Yep. Yeah.
But I mean, that's pretty much it for this episode. Before we do leave, before we even plug our information, Andrew, we had a certain podcast accept a little challenge that we had.
We did. Team Reach Around and Team Strong Style. We're gonna be meeting. I don't know. Are we going to the Tokyo Dome? Or are they coming? They're coming over this way.
They're coming to us. We have the home court field, whatever advantage you want to call it. But the Smackdown, we're doing a Smackdown. People, for anyone who did not listen to the Blue Zone, who does not know what a Smackdown is, it's a trivia competition about wrestling topics. And, you know, it's basically, it's a few smarks going at each other. That's why it's called a goddamn Smackdown. Andrew, we better win this, man.
We are. House Reach Around is going to prove that we are the greatest podcasters in all of space and time. Exactly. Since Matt Hardy can't do it, I can. Fuck it. Fuck me. Fuck that owl. Hashtag fuck that owl.
You're going to get a letter from Anthem.
That is what it is. By the way, happy 316, bro.
Oh, happy 316.
It's a little goofy-ass wrestling holiday. St. Patrick's Day Eve in some circles. But, yeah, no, it's 316. Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. Let's go ahead and crack open a couple beers. But before we do that, tell the people where they can find you.
They can find me on Twitter, at WWPNBello. Thank you for all the tweets about the concern about my life during the storm. No, I'm kidding. I actually didn't get any. No one gives a shit about me, apparently. But
yeah, I asked if you were alive.
You did. That's true. I think we spoke, though. Like, we probably podcasted together. No,
no we didn't. But,
no? I don't know. But, yeah, okay. So CJ's the only one who cares. This is why Team Reach Around. We got a bond that cannot be broken. We don't give a fuck about strong style.
Exactly. Exactly. Strong what? But you can follow me at CEO Hayes. But more importantly, go to the WWPN where we actually made some changes to the website. Changed a couple of colors around, made it look a little bit better. We're adding a few other places for things to go for the videos because we're going to have new video content. It's a work in progress. We're making a lot of changes. JB's been working on that thing tirelessly. Literally, like the last 2 days, I think, like every hour, I'm getting, hey man, I changed this. It's gonna be a great website.
Hey, I gotta have to check it out. Yeah.
So, we changed some color schemes, it looks a lot better. We also finally added Fame and Dwayne to the host section, considering Fame's been around for like 3 months now, and we're just like, getting them added. But, but yeah, definitely check that out. And, like I like to end every podcast on, I just want to thank you guys for liking, sharing, subscribing, and just being a part of the WWPN and our growth. We actually, because our stats website was down for like a week, and I was able just really to get into them earlier today, over like the last 10 days, we have like an additional 110 subscribers. So, all the new subscribers, thank you for that. I don't know where the hell you guys came from, but I'm definitely happy you found your way here. Whatever turn in your life led you down this podcast, and for the things you're going to hear on this network, I feel sorry, but I also thank you.
Yep. In case you haven't heard, WWPN, it's good for you, bitch. Swallow it.
Good night, people. Thank you. Starting now.